Hey there, Ira here. Last week, we marked the end of our Science Friday book club reading of Stephen Hawking's A Brief History of Time. And to celebrate, we held a time traveler cocktail party at Caveat in New York City. We had hands-on physics demos, made time capsules, learned about the quest to find intermediate mass black holes, and of course, there were themed drinks. So we thought we'd share a selection of highlights from the night so you could enjoy it too. Oh, and one quick warning, this was an after-hours cocktail party, so the language isn't quite as squeaky clean as your average Science Friday. Here's events manager Rachel Bouton kicking things off.
Hello, thank you all so much for being here and for joining me across the expanse of space and time. I want to practice something with you all. We're going to do this a couple times throughout the evening. When I say, what time is it? I want you to yell, space time, okay? So what time is it?
Space time!
Oh, that feels good. All right, so Ryan Mandelbaum is a space writer for Gizmodo, where they cover anything smaller than a virus and anything larger than a planet. Ryan first read A Brief History of Time in high school, and they're super into birds, which I think is very cool. They'll be in conversation with Jillian Bellovary, who has a PhD in astronomy at the University of Washington and is currently an assistant professor at Queensborough Community College and a research scientist at the American Museum of Natural History, where she studies the formation and evolution of massive black holes using cosmological hydrodynamic simulations. We know what that means. So they're both pretty smart. Please welcome Ryan and Jillian.
Hi.
Hi, hey everybody.
So I guess the first thing you have to answer is how black holes bend light, because my dad asked that.
Black holes bend light because they actually warp the space and time around them. And so space is actually curved around a black hole, and light will travel in a straight line. But since space is curved, that straight line is now a curved line. And so the light just has to follow space.
So why can't we see a black hole then? Is that why?
Well, we can't see a black hole because light can never escape. Light can never come out of it. But we can see things that are near black holes, which is helpful. So if there are stars that are orbiting black holes, or if there's gas that's falling into a black hole, it will glow really brightly. Then we can see what's going on, and we can be like, hey, there's X-rays coming out of nothing. Maybe there's a black hole there, because why else would there be X-rays coming out of nothing?
So you've spent more time thinking about black holes than anyone. So can you tell me, certainly more than me. I think about, a lot of that stuff. But I guess I want to know can you tell me more about what are the biggest questions that people, what are you asking about black holes right now? What are you wondering?
Sure. So I want to know how these supermassive black holes form. So Ray kind of alluded to this. We don't really know how they form. We know that the small black holes form when massive stars die and blow up. But the supermassive ones, like the one in the center of our Milky Way, that's a million times the mass of the sun, we don't know how it got made, at all. We know that you can't build a million solar mass black hole with 1 million small black holes. It doesn't work for lots of reasons. And we know that these things form really early in the universe. And so you have all of this mass that needs to get into a really small space in a really short amount of time. And we don't know how to do that, at all.
Can you, I can't even visualize how big this is. I know the Sag A star, the one at the center of our galaxy, Sagittarius A star, has, mm-hmm. It's 4 million times the mass of the sun. Can you give us, are there any other, ways we can visualize just how, hefty and small these things are?
Well, the size of that black hole, if it were in our solar system, would extend to about where, the Earth's radius, or the Earth's, orbit is. But there's 4 million suns in that space, which is a lot. And Stephen Hawking said that one the size of a, the mass of a mountain would be the size of a nucleus of an atom, which is not something we can even actually really, you guys are all but really you're I don't know what that, what? Which is the appropriate response, so don't feel bad.
Yeah, I mean, you can't, what if you, turned a person into a black hole? What if, the president turned into a black hole?
Oh, shucks. Something I teach in my classes, actually, is if you could turn a person into a black hole, they could like power the entire United States energy budget for like many, many years. So it would be very efficient use of energy.
Yeah. So I know that we've spoken about these stellar mass black holes, right? That stars that collapse. We've spoken about these mysterious, like gigantic, supermassive black holes. But I mean, is there anything like that's it? What's going on in the middle?
Ah, yeah. So you may wonder, like, is there anything in between, like small and large? Because there's like a huge gap in between. And yes, we think black holes might come in medium. Possibly. So one of my specialties is to try and figure out if there are intermediate mass black holes, which is what we call anything that's like more than 100 times the mass of the sun and less than like a million times the mass of the sun, which is still a really big, huge range. And there's no like definitive evidence or proof for these because it's really hard to measure the mass of a black hole. You can't just like weigh it. And so, but there's some evidence for some, and these cosmological hydrodynamic simulations that were mentioned earlier that I work on predict that there are actually a bunch of them in small galaxies and floating around in our own Milky Way. Dun, dun, dun.
Ooh. Well, so everybody's like making fun of these cosmic hydrodynamic simulations, but like, what are they?
Basically, I take over 1,000 computers at NASA for about 6 to 9 months. And you just put in all of the physics equations that we know about, like gravity, hydrodynamics, so like gas, heating and cooling, energy. We put in some stars, we put in some dark matter. We don't know what that is, but we make it up and it's fine. It's fine. And then I study what happens in the black holes. And so I basically make a little cube of fake universe and compare it to the real universe. And I'm like, oh, hey, I've got a bunch of black holes around. Maybe the real universe also has these black holes. And then I tell my friends with telescopes to go look for them.
So like, we can't see a black hole. Okay, so we got to look at the radio waves. Like, is there anybody who's actually trying to like take a picture of a black hole?
Sure. Sure. there's a project called the Event Horizon Telescope, which is actually an array of telescopes that covers the entire planet, like from Australia to South America to North America to Europe to South Africa, I believe, like all the continents, pretty much. And they're trying to actually take a picture of the Sagittarius A star black hole in the microwave wavelength range.
So would that just look like a black circle?
The simulations predict that there might actually be a weird, funky shape because there's gas around the black hole that is being accreted, and because of the strong gravitational effects and the bending of space and time, it might actually be like this weird, disky, funky thing.
So, like, how similar to the black hole from Interstellar do you think like a black hole is?
Interstellar is pretty good in terms of like the time dilation stuff, like the people who go to the Gargantua like don't age and they come back to Earth and like the daughter is like super old, like that's real. But like once they go like inside the black hole and there's like libraries inside, I gotta draw the line. There's no evidence for that. There's no evidence for not that. But there's no evidence for that.
So you heard it here, folks. There's libraries inside of black holes.
I mean, maybe there's like candy cane unicorn Disneyland in black holes, but we would never know. Why not? That'd be lovely.
So, I mean, I think that they're like intriguing. Like, this is the craziest thing that as humans have managed to come up with. So why do you like studying them?
Because they're so fucking weird. Yeah. They're just so weird. You know, you first learned about them and I was just like, what is this ridiculous thing? And then I was like, could I have a job thinking about this thing? Like, will somebody pay me to do this? And they do. They do. Somebody pays me to think about this. They're just so cool. And the answers are never, like, we can never find them all. There's always more questions, which is why science is great and why I will have job security forever, because we will never know all the answers, so I will just keep asking more questions.
So, well, I mean, when you go to work and you have to think about this stuff, I mean, how do you wrap your head around just, you know, like some scientists cover like 11 dimensions and you're like warping gravity? Like, I mean, how do you even just go to work in the morning and think about this stuff?
Sometimes you just gotta stop thinking about it. But no, there's a lot of good analogies, there's some warped space-time over there in the corner that Christy was hanging out with before, where it's an analogy for space-time, where if you have a piece of fabric and you stick a ball in it and it droops, and that's warping of space-time, except that space is actually in three dimensions instead of two, but it's a good analogy. And so you kind of go with that. And then I just like to use my imagination and, add another dimension. And it's sort of hard to think about that, but then I just pretend. And there's some math that goes with it too. And so I know of some of that math stuff, and that kind of helps to an extent. And otherwise I just go with it. And then at some point you just have to sort of put it away and be like, all right, I'm just going to write some code now. Because that's really mostly what I do anyway.
I guess I'm just free associating here, but I mean, we live on Earth, so there's gravity on that, I assume.
Indeed.
I mean, surely there's like some warping of space-time effects that we'd be able to experience here, right? I mean, isn't like Einstein's theory of general relativity like even measurable here on our own planet?
It's true. GPS satellites wouldn't work if we didn't take into effect general relativistic effects because of the warping of space-time. And so... and we can also measure the effect of the sun's gravity on the orbit of Mercury. So yeah. We can definitely observe it here.
Awesome. And so I know a little something about you, and it's that you have another name. What is your professional name, I might say it is?
My other name in my other profession is Big Banger. Which I am known as when I skate for the Bronx gridlock with Gotham Girls Roller Derby.
So, I mean, roller derby is like the most physics thing that exists, right? Like, you must be skating just like, I'm a black hole, like, I'm gonna...
Pretty much. No, when I skate, I'm constantly thinking about, like, friction, like how my wheels are acting on the floor. I'm thinking about angular momentum because I'm going around turns. Collisions when I smash into people. There's tons of physics in roller derby. And part of the reason I'm so good at roller derby is because I'm good at physics.
Damn. So I don't know how much time we have left, but I was wondering, like, we're here talking about books. I read A Brief History of Time. It was awesome. So, I mean, what are some books that you as a scientist would recommend? And they don't have to be like nonfiction. I mean, anything.
The kind of books I love to read the most are like sci-fi and fantasy books where humanity is like put in a position where they have to like be like human and evolve to some difficult situation. Like Dawn by Octavia Butler is an example where like some aliens come and they're like, we're assimilating you. And they wake up one lady named Lilith and be like, you are our ambassador. And she's like, oh shit. What do I do? And then there's a whole series that she like that evolves over time. And also, I really recommend the Broken Earth trilogy by N.K. Jemisin. Yeah. It is mind-blowing, and it's like both fantasy and sci-fi. But it's just like, what are humans doing, and what have we become, and how do we treat people? But it's also like rocks are alive. It's so cool. It's so cool. Read it.
Also, she just won the Hugo Award the third time in a row.
Three books, three Hugos. Yeah. She's amazing.
Read that book.
Read those books.
And then I guess the last question is just talking about Stephen Hawking. You know, how do you feel like you're embodying his legacy or whatever? You're like, I mean, like he's like some dude, and now we're like, no way.
Yeah,
like,
I mean, I don't. I didn't know him. But he's definitely, really inspiring and someone to look back at and be like, wow, look at all these things he thought about. And if I can just do like 1% of that, I will feel pretty good about myself.
And what else do you want people to know about? Is that it? Anything else? Any signing off words?
You should come to our game on Saturday.
All right. Huge, huge, huge round of applause for Ryan Mendelbaum and Big Banger? Big Banger is at the Jillian Bellaberry.
Should we take questions from the audience?
I don't know that we have. We
maybe
will
like
do,
one question.
Yeah,
from the
do
audience?
We have one question from the audience? Ooh, right here. Catch. JK. Sorry, caveat. I swear I won't do that to your equipment.
Cool. So, can you explain a little bit about how nothing is lost in a black hole, and that perhaps our universe could be like a hologram. Have you heard that? I'm sure that you have. But like, I saw a snippet about that and it blew my mind and sort of sounded like anything that goes into a black hole, all of its ingredients are sort of scattered about in some sort of almost code-like system over the surface of the black hole that you could sort of see what everything that ever went in it and when.
I've also heard this.
I've also heard this. So this is a theory. There are some theories that information can never be lost. And so like if an electron falls into a black hole, it has some speed and it has some spin and it has some whatever else. And it maintains that. And so in theory, if you like tossed a book into a black hole and then over the next 10 to the 100 years or so measured the Hawking radiation that came from the black hole, you would be able to reconstruct the book.
So it's the Hawking radiation.
If it's all together in the black hole, we can't go and find it because it's in the black hole, and if we go to find it, we die.
Right.
So in theory, according to some theories, I don't think this is everyone's theory. And again, this is the sort of thing that I push it away. It's not.
You have to know library.
That's how you get the library.
You have to throw a library into the black hole, and then there's a library in the black hole. Maybe. So it's based on this premise that information can never be lost, which it's untrue, or it's unclear if that's true. So I don't know if that's the case. But also, it's impossible as of now to detect Hawking radiation, and so we won't know for a while.
All right, thank you so much. Big round of applause for Ryan Mendelbaum and Jillian Delaberry. Go see Roller Derby. It's really fun and amazing. And it is now time for our final segment of the night, which is something I am so profoundly excited for. I'm kind of losing my mind. Some of you may have heard of her, but Jana Levin is the director of scientists and chair of the science studios at Pioneer Works and Claire Tau professor of physics and astronomy at Barnard College of Columbia University. She has contributed to an understanding of black holes, the cosmology of extra dimensions, and gravitational waves in the shape of space-time. She was also recently named a Guggenheim Fellow, and her books include How the Universe Got Its Spots and Black Hole Blues and Other Songs from Outer Space, which tells the story of the discovery of the century. Some of you might remember this. It was the sound of space-time ringing from the collision of two black holes over a billion years ago. You guys might remember that discovery. It was pretty cool. So basically, Jana is a complete and total black hole badass. And the piece Jana is about to read was originally composed for and performed at the Universe in Verse, a celebration of science through poetry, which is hosted by Jana and curated by Maria Popova at Pioneer Works in Brooklyn. The poem you're about to hear is by Maria Howe. I'd like you all to please welcome Jana Levin.
Make a big thing about lowering the mic.
Okay. All right.
So it occurs to me maybe to mention that I knew Stephen. I was in Stephen's group in Cambridge for many years. And in the hallways, we used to joke about whose toes he ran over with his wheelchair when he was feeling impish. I think it was none of our toes, but we all pretended anyway. Just since we're talking about him tonight, I should say that knowing him, I don't think that his prodigious mind, his unbelievable accomplishments, can be strongly enough contrasted against those obstacles he faced. He really was just an unbelievable person. He was also incredibly arrogant and belligerent and difficult. Lenny Susskind said of his good friend Stephen Hawking, the man was arrogant, impossible, but then again, so am I. So this was my upbringing in theoretical physics. Just to say he is very much missed, and just to point out that he really did create a paradox, especially in the 70s, over black holes that no one has yet been able to resolve. Everyone tries to resolve, even Hawking tries to concede occasionally that there was this resolution, and you brought it up earlier with the Hawking radiation and the evaporation of the black hole, but there are two contrasting, competing things that are going on in nature, and no one can figure it out. And the black hole is the terrain and the only terrain on which we're going to figure it out. And Hawking is the one who gave us this gift of revealing that to us, that that was the frontier. That is the frontier. If we want to understand quantum gravity, the ultimate theory of everything, the final chapter is A Brief History of Time, we have to understand the black hole. And we don't, even since he first proposed this in the 70s, a couple of years after his diagnosis was supposed to be completely fatal. So on that note, he was a loved man. He was a loved man. He was a difficult but loved man. So this is a poem by Marie Howe, and I'm honored that Maria Popova and Marie Howe asked me to read this poem, which was written for the universe in verse about Stephen Hawking, or at least inspired after Stephen Hawking. Do you sometimes want to wake up to the singularity we once were? So compact, nobody needed a bed or food or money, nobody hiding in the school bathroom or home alone, pulling open the drawer where the pills are kept. For every atom belonging to me, as good belongs to you. Remember? There was no nature, no them, no tests to determine if the elephant grieves her calf or if the coral reef feels pain. Trashed oceans don't speak English or Farsi or French. Would that we could wake up to what we were when we were ocean, and before that to when sky was earth and animal was energy and rock was liquid and stars were space and space was not at all, nothing. Before we came to believe humans were so important, before this awful loneliness. Can molecules recall it, what once was before anything happened? No I, no we, no one, no was, no verb, no noun, only a tiny, tiny dot brimming with is, all everything home.
Thanks to Caveat, our guests Jana Levin, Marie Howe, Julian Bellavari, Ryan Mandelbaum, Ray Paletta, and all the Science Friday staff who helped make it happen. Stay tuned later this week for our regular Sci-Fi podcast. Thanks for listening. I'm Ira Flatow.